Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf field specialist living the life in Lemon, South Dakota. Our guest on this episode is Jacqueline Wilson, a lady that keeps busy on the ranch as an artist with a welding torch and a writer. So welcome to Cattle HQ, Jacqueline. In my introduction, I mentioned you are a writer, and that's exactly how I found you. It was actually an article that you wrote in the Tri-State Neighbor, and it just really sparked my interest because you were talking about AI. And
yeah,
the
thanks,
cost
Robin.
Of AI. Yeah. And so I was really excited about finding that article. I mean, I read the Tri-State Neighbor, but I just was glad to see that article because my background actually is reproductive management, and I get to teach people how to AI. And so finding this article just is like, excellent. I need to get Jacqueline on my podcast.
Well, thanks, Robin, and thanks for the invite. Yeah, so I do write weekly editorials for the Midwest Messenger family, which Tri-State is part of that. And so they go out to about 65,000 producers every week throughout the Great Plains. So it's always, and the nice part is they give me freedom to kind of write about what I want to write. So sorry about the noise in the background. We're trying to get set up right now for branding tomorrow. So the crew's pulling the Daniels around. So it's kind of a zoo this morning.
Oh, I can't hear a darn thing, but I'm glad you're able to.
Great, well, I can.
Well, I'm glad that you are with us. And just to kind of kick this off, when I talk to folks about AI, several folks tell me they let the bulls do all the work. I mean, why would we even consider AI? That's a lot of extra effort. But in your article, you mentioned that you guys on your ranch have been AIing for over 30 years. And why is that?
Yeah, so, you know, we have been AIing for over 30 years. And I think the bigger reason that, you know, we originally got started is it was a way for us to bring in top quality genetics into our herd a lot faster than we could afford them if we went out and purchased the bulls. That was the biggest benefit for us. And then not only that, but it really helped sync our cow herd up into a shortened breeding season. You know, I get asked time and time again, what's the quickest way you can increase uniformity in your cow crop? And I said, it's easy. All you got to do, I'm going to try to move a little bit out of the noise here. I said, all you got to do is shorten that breeding season. And AI gives us that opportunity to do that.
Awesome. Anything else that, any other reasons? I mean, those are some really obviously important reasons, major reasons why you guys are AIing. But over the years, have you ever thought about saying, we are done with AI? This is too much.
You know, I'll be honest, there was a time back when I originally came home from the University of Nebraska, and we were doing, we were heat checking everything instead of working with sync programs. And that was definitely, you know, because we have May, June, and so we were AIing for that first week of May. And so you start backtracking in your days there. I mean, we're AI sometimes in the heat of summer. And there would be days that we'd be riding heat, you know, during the middle of the day or getting cows in 100 degree temps. And we're like, why are we doing this? But fortunately, you know, there's been a lot of great resources that have come out. And now we're using the 7x7 sink, and it's made it about as easy for us as possible. So, I mean, there's really not a downside now. And it's one of those things that we do, you know, every year we're like, boy, that was easy, you know? And then I think it's really rewarding too, because I don't buy outside bulls. I utilize our own genetics to develop bulls. And so, you know, half of those bulls, of course, the sire side is coming from that AI. And so the only bulls I do keep are out of AI sires. And so, it's like I said, it's a way to bring in genetics that otherwise we may not have the capability to use just because we couldn't afford those bulls at a production cell or, you know, or half sibs or anything of those producers. So it's a great thing overall for us, especially when we started factoring the cost this year. This was the first year that I kept track of absolutely everything, you know, not only the cost of the seeders and the shots and but started to look at what does it cost us in labor, you know, in the time that we actually commit to AI. And then what would it cost us if we decided to utilize bulls instead? And And on a year-by-year basis, I found about a $50,000 difference in cost for AIing this year on about 250 head of cows, as opposed to if I would have had to purchase bulls for those same cows. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant, economic advantage right there for us. And one that I was pretty pleased with the overall results of.
So with that 7 and 7, you actually have to bring those cows through an additional time versus doing a Cosyn plus Cedar protocol, for instance. And so how did that affect the logistics? Did it affect you? Was it a negative? Because one people's downside is like, I don't want to continuously run my cows down that alley. I have to sort those calves off again and run those cows down through again. And was that a hardship for you guys?
I think it's always a challenge, when you bring cows in an additional time. Well, when you bring cattle in any time, you're already running up against some challenges. And one of the things that we've really seen over the years and utilize is different pasture rotations in terms of where we're bringing those cows at every time. So this time it worked. We were able to bring them in a different direction every single time we brought them into the corrals. So they were able to flow in nice and easy. We weren't fighting them coming in, because that's usually the biggest hardship for us is fighting them to get them into the corrals. Once we get them into the corrals, they work great. But I mean, the cows know what's going on. So we kind of felt like, oh, we had the upper hand on them in the way that we were confusing them around. Oh, we're going to bring you in this time, but next time we're going to bring you in from this way and this direction. And it worked out really good. And we also made sure we had backup plans too. The other thing that I really like to do is, like I was just talking about, we have the Daniels alleyway over here. We do use a double Daniels alleyway. It's, it's about, what are they, 45 foot long or so. I do not put a chute on the front of them. So I never catch a cow in the chute during the entire AI process. I'm putting in cedars over the side. We're doing any PG or GNRH sides over the side. And I think that also gives us a little bit of an advantage too with how those cattle work, because they can flow right through that alleyway. They're not worried. We're not taking that extra time about trying to get them into a chute of any kind. And I think that's also a time saver for us too.
Absolutely. That does make a big difference. And then, like you said, it's just that animal behavior too. And you're not having to stop every one of them in that chute. And that does slow things down and also impacts the flow of that animal. I believe that a lot. Like, oh, I see something I don't like coming up, because every time I come into this thing, I get squeezed and something happens to me, and et cetera, et cetera. So it is nice to just kind of get that flow and keep things moving. You had mentioned, let's kind of go back to that cost analysis that you did. So when I talk with producers a lot too, they always say that AI is so much more expensive, but you found that it wasn't at all. But also you took into consideration the full year of feeding that bull or bulls that you had. But when we think about natural service and only using natural service or even our cleanup bulls on AI, we have to take into consideration those cows that bull didn't get bred either.
Absolutely.
A lot of people are like, they don't think about that. You got to think about, okay, those bulls, if it was natural service and you got a 90% stick on your cows through natural service, there was still 10% of them that you had to sell, but there's still a cost against that bull,
Yeah, and absolutely.
And so I think that a lot of people have to think about that, not just the purchase price, as you mentioned, but what it takes to feed that bull throughout the season. And then also that expense against them because of those open cows that you have. So kind of
what I did, Robin, in determining, so we can actually give some producers out there some numbers, some solid numbers. Mm-hmm. And I don't have them right here. I'm just going off my memory. But what I did is I analyzed all different aspects of it. I said, okay, every time that we left the shop to go round up cattle to the time we got back to the shop, I was keeping track of the time that we were using to actually work cattle through the chute. What it was costing me if I was paying us all a salary, and I was giving us, I mean, I was being advantageous. I was saying we were worth at least $30 an hour for all of us across the board, and there's four employees. I mean, there's my dad, myself, and then we have two other teammates that help in the process. I contract my AIing out. Both my dad and I, well, actually, I think all four of us know how to AI, but it goes a lot quicker if I use a contract crew that comes in that day of, and I do semen prep, since I'm very familiar with the mating, since I'm the one that did the matings. And so, you know, by the time I factored in the time that we were spending and what that was costing us in terms of salary for everyone, along with the vaccines, along with cedars, and then any addition, and then the semen costs too on top of that, I got to about a 15,000, and this was on 250 head of cows. So, and this was I was using four main bulls, and then along with some extra cleanup semen that I had on hand. And so it was around a 15,000 cost for us is what it was costing me, which I know for some producers might seem like quite a lot. But then if you factor it this way and you say, okay, so 250 cows, let's just say 50% conception by AI. So you have bulls that need to breed 125 cows. Well, you know, we run a shortened breeding season here. I'm about a 45-day season. And so I like to figure, because of our bigger pasture size, I like to figure one bull, especially a young bull, to 10 to 15 cows. And so I'm like, okay, in my mind, I need to have about seven or eight bulls. Well, if I buy, say a little bit upper quality bull, say average around $8,500 a bull, you know, and then figure out the cost for running that bull for a year, you know, all of a sudden, I'm getting quite a bit of difference there. So it came out to about a $50,000 difference between what it would have cost, what I saved by AIing those cows instead of by going out and purchasing bulls. Now in my situation, the cost is of course different because we raise our own bulls, so we don't have the expense of going out and purchasing bulls. But you know, we still then have that extra cost of getting those calves up to breeding age and et cetera, et cetera. But it was just kind of a good, easy example to show for us, you know, that it's definitely worth it, and then maybe even consider why aren't we even do AIing more cows? And so, you know, last year when we had the success, last year was the first year we did the 7x7. I should say the calves arrived by the 7x7, so this would have been the second time we bred them that way. It increased our conception rates above our normal AI percentage about 20%, and so I'm like, well, it's already due more. So we threw in our Three, do it threw in some younger cows in that group too, that we just pregged last week. The breed up on those cows was decent, and I asked the vet afterwards. I said, so kind of what does it look like in terms of the breeding season? And he says, looks like everything was bred pretty early, so we're hoping that the majority of those were AI bred. And so I'll know more calving season time, determine on how many of those actually stuck or not. But you know, this year it was very successful utilizing that program. Last year was very successful, and it's to the point now where, you know, I think a lot of ranches around here are starting to see a lot of fallout in their 3-year-old cows. I mean, we have the last 2 years. I've got some conspiracies on that, but I'm not going to get into those. But you know, it's definitely something that I think we might even be utilizing out coming up in our 3-year-olds too.
So you actually are only taking a portion of your cow herd and AIing them. Is that what I'm understanding then?
That is
Gotcha.
correct. So I'm giving anything the opportunity to be AI'd from a 4-year-old and up, and then I'm hand selecting them. You know, after calving, I'm pairing out different directions, and so I'll have anything that's like at any issue at all. You know, maybe poor performer udders, any situation like that, I won't put in that AI group. I kind of like to use just more of our top elite cows because those are also the ones that I'm keeping our bulls out of. And so, you know, I am picky about what I do AI too, except this year, in terms of the younger cows, I did throw a couple groups of our younger cows in there just because I really wanted to see what they would do with a 7x7. I've heard through the grapevine, you know, it doesn't sound near as successful on heifers. And so I don't have any experience on that. You know, we used to AI all of our heifers and I quit doing that. Oh, now it's been probably about four or 5 years ago I stopped AIing heifers and just doing the older cows. And the reason for that is I was doing a 28-day breeding season at that time on the heifers. And if you did a sink program, you didn't have enough time for them to really cycle back in order to catch them up on that cleanup. And so went to a 45-day program on the heifers and doing all bull breds. And that seems to work really well. And it also, since I raised all the bulls, it also gives me a lot more control on our birth weights. And so since we have done that, the number of dystocia issues has decreased dramatically since I quit AIing my heifers and just do it off our own home-raised bulls.
Excellent. So, have you ever thought on those heifers doing just a natural service, but just doing like a one-shot prostaglandin with them to see if you could tighten them up, you know, even a little more within that 45? Because that's still a really short breeding season, right? But have you ever thought of doing that, or have you done that?
So I haven't seen a need for it yet. And let me explain why is because so the last couple of years we're hitting over 90% on that 45-day season on heifers. And so we hit 92% this year. You know, for me, that if they can't get bread in 45 days, they can go visit somebody else's farm or ranch, you know? And so I feel that until we start seeing a significant drop in conception rates on those heifers, I'm not going to, just for the fact of having to run them through the chute.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you know, hopefully we won't see that decrease anytime soon.
I don't expect that, actually, Jacqueline, at all. Like you said, you've been selecting those heifers, you know the genetics, you've been using a short, you know, so there's a lot of things going for you that I don't expect you to see a decrease at all in your heifers. So kudos to you guys. That's pretty awesome on your management and everything that you guys have been doing. So you
had Yeah, Robin, just a second. I think there is a lot to be said about the university studies on that really encourage producers to keep, you know, offspring or replacements that are within that first cycle or within that first 40 days. And I mean, we're really conscientious of that. We do have kept performance data for longer than we've AI'd. And so, you know, just understanding when those birth dates are, will I keep a younger, you know, a calf born in that later part of that 45 days? Sometimes, but they have to be pretty special. So, you know, as long as we consider keeping those replacements right up towards the front of that breeding season, I think that's really helped with some of those reproduction issues also.
Absolutely. I know Nebraska has done work on that. South Dakota has done work on that. When keeping those females that were born earlier in the breeding season, not only will obviously they have the time to mature for you, get bred up, also hopefully in that first part of the cycle that when they get bred, but also longevity. Have you noticed that in your cow herd, the longevity? Because that is, to me, one of the biggest concerns in the beef industry is longevity of our females.
And no, so it absolutely is. No, it absolutely is. And yes, I do. I had made a decision this week, and I had a 17-year-old cow that ended up bred again. And so she's staying around here another year. And the thing is we don't supplement them with anything additional in the winter. You know, if it's a blizzard, they'll get hay. Otherwise they might get some tubs. And we did find a high protein mineral this year just because we've been in a severe drought. But yeah, we do have significantly some great old cows here. My grandpa used to, when he was running the operation, everything used to go to town at 10 years of age. And what we found out is we've got a number of those cows that are producing into 12, 14, 16 years. And I think it's not necessarily so much the genetics. I think it's how we develop them too. You know, we calve later, we wean in October, then those calves are ran on grass until the end of the year. And then they're in our background lot, but I'm only putting about a 2-pound ADG on them is it. And so I feel like we're really trying to develop those rumen and get a nice cover on them, but they're not fat. And I think that's one of the problems that I see time and time in the industry again, is we're getting cattle too fat, both females and males. And then what happens is if they're not able to maintain that condition, the first thing that shuts off is that reproduction stage, you know, everything to do with reproduction. And so I mean, we body condition score our cattle every year. You know, I really want them to keep them in that about 5 to 6 range is ideal for here and for me year round. And if we get out of that one direction or another, I mean, I know my falls, I've got fall calvers too. They're going to be coming in around 6 at calving time, which is a little fat for me, but I mean, I know they're going to lose it. And so I think those are also the big things is we got to quit pushing cattle so much. We got to develop them properly. And in turns, I think we'll have better success with reproduction.
Absolutely. So I know you have a lot going on, Jacqueline. So I want to probably just wrap up this episode so that you can get back to doing your daily tasks and also getting ready for branding tomorrow. But if you had to share any advice with the listeners on this podcast, what would that be to help improve that reproductive success? And like I said earlier, we were talking about a shorter calving season, synchronization, AI. I mean, AI is not the only way to improve reproductive success. It actually can cause more failure depending on how you're set up. But with the listeners, what would you like to share with them? Any advice when it comes to improving reproductive success on your operation?
I think the biggest thing that I could say to producers is just keep track of data, you know, not only like individual animal data, but also start analyzing everything every year that you do, you know, whether it's the nutrition aspect of it or, you know, your preg rate percentages or how many bulls you're utilizing and keep track of that data. And you know, we utilize a couple different computer programs to do that, both on the pasture side and then also on the cow side. And so that gives me an advantage every year that I can go back and compare data from previous years and see maybe where we need some adjustments. And I think the other thing is if you got some poor producing cows, get them out of your herd. There's no reason they need to be in your herd. You know, you don't need to have those genetics continue on in a herd. They're not going to better your herd at all from a reproductive standpoint, because an open cow is not worth any. I should say they're worth money now, but that's not going to continue your proper economics on your operation. So, but you need to have that data there. And that's, I think, something that we've done for, you know, my grandfather used to keep track of data on an 8x4 note cards back in, oh my goodness, I can't even, it was probably 70, 80 years ago. You know, we've been tracking individual animal data, and I think that's what's really helped us out over the years.
Excellent. And I actually wanted to circle back. I said we were going to wrap up, but I did have one more question. I am so sorry.
No, you're fine.
So you talked about that you have a grazing rotation throughout the summer, and that's right in the middle of your breeding season because, like you said, you're May, June calvers, so you are breeding later into the summer. And some people have that mentality. It's like, I can't AI, I can't do that because we are out in grass doing, you know, and I just can't bring them in, or we can't do XYZ. And obviously that hasn't hindered you guys at all.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And there's a couple reasons for that is because, you know, I don't have, we don't, we're later calvers. We don't have to utilize those pasture around our house to calve. So I pasture calve everything. You know, I'll go out once a day, weigh, tag, band if needed. And then, so what it does is it frees up those pastures for me around the corrals that I could put them into a rotation there during breeding season instead. And I know not everybody, you know, I know there's a lot of producers out there that has specific, you know, winter ground and summer ground. And fortunately for us, it's really important to me that I hit pastures at different times every year, just so I can get the plant diversity. It works for this operation. Doesn't mean it works for everyone. Now in the past too, where we've, you know, where we have AI'd, oh, back, like I said, for many, many years, you know, there's been times that, no, we haven't been anywhere close to corrals, and then we take the facilities to them. So, you know, whether that's we've got all our portable corrals set up here that like that's what I'm setting up today, you know, that I are really beneficial, and they have more than paid for themselves over the years. So from even just a stress perspective on and the aspect of the cattle, you know, and how they're handled is I think sometimes it doesn't, it's not a benefit to bring cattle to the corrals. We just take the stuff to them, and that works out great too for us.
So you bet you have built flexibility in about every aspect of your operation. I mean, really, which is, I think, really great because the when people have the mentality that we can't do that, I think they're already setting themselves up for failure regardless because they don't have that open mind and that flexibility to accommodate and help themselves and their operation. So.
No, you're spot on. And I think that's actually one of the biggest things that I see that's going to cause some, you know, some great issues in our industry over the years is those generations that say we've done it this way forever. We have to continue to do it this way. And I'm of the, you know, the mindset that, hey, okay, well, if you're going to tell me I can't do this, I'm going to figure out a way that I can, as long as it benefits my, you know, operation. And fortunately, you know, my dad and I are partners in our operation, and he's very open-minded. You know, his dad was open-minded about bringing new ideas and thought processes into the operation. So for me, that's the generational mindset is to kind of keep thinking outside the box. And so very fortunate and blessed to be in an operation that thinks that way, you know, that there's always a way that we can figure out to do something. But it is, it's the key is the flexibility part of it. Like we know for a fact of what day we're going to AI, and then we just set up everything around that. And so yes, does it take planning? Does it take thought process? It does. But boy, it's been more than worth it, not only from an economic standpoint, but also from a genetic improvement standpoint. I mean, the data is there for us for what I'm seeing in our herd, and it's getting us to my personal genetic goals faster. And I mean, it's definitely, I would highly encourage any operation to look into it, because it has definitely benefited us for the better.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jacqueline, and thank you joining us. Thank you for joining us today from the pasture. That's what's great about doing everything virtually here. We can be about anywhere. So, before we end this episode of Cattle HQ, if you actually do have an interest in attending an AI school, you can go to SDSU Extension website and complete our AI school interest form. And you will be on our notification list. So anyone that has an interest. So once again, this has been Cattle HQ brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, live a great story.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that. Live a great
yeah.
story.
Yeah,
great.
That's actually my best friend's motto in life, and it's something that I treasure. So
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That is a good
Well,
one.
Thank you so much, and you have a great rest of your day and enjoy your branding tomorrow.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.